This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today's episode comes to you on location from the Commonwealth of Virginia and the state of California. But first, On Location is produced by the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. Today's program is hosted by Emily Jernigan with the California Department of Child Support Services as she hosts Barbara Lucena, the director of Virginia's Child Support Enforcement Program, and David Kilgore, director of the California Department of Child Support Services. They have a conversation focused on the National Child Support Market Research Survey that was recently launched. Here's some of the preliminary findings that were discussed at the February 2023 NCA Policy Forum in Washington, D.C., and some thoughts about how to turn the trends around as they explore how the child support program will look in the future. Listen as they discuss barriers to delivering services, shifting from mandated referrals to selling the child support product, and what has to change with the program's current philosophies. It's going to be a great show, so stick around, and we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Emily Jernigan of California Department of Child Support Services. Welcome to another episode of the NCIA On Location podcast, dedicated to helping child support professionals continue their professional and personal development. Our discussion today will be focused on the National Child Support Market Research Survey that was recently kicked off. Some of the preliminary findings were discussed at the NCIA Policy Forum in February 2023, in the plenary called Addressing Declining Child Support Caseloads, which included a conversation about what can be done to turn the trend around. Both of our guests today have podcasted with us before, and I'm delighted to welcome them back today. We have David Kilgore, the director of the California Department of Child Support Services, and Barbara Lucena, the director of the Virginia Department of Child Support Enforcement. Thank you both for joining us today. David, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Emily. It's a pleasure to be here with you all today. I've been the director of California for about 5 years now and have enjoyed every moment of it. It's challenging and it's exciting, but I'm particularly interested in looking at and exploring how the child support program is going to look in the future. And I think that's where a lot of my interest and my passion goes when it relates to this concept of public relations and how people are viewing us. So that's why this topic is passionate to me, and I've enjoyed working with Barbara and exploring that further.
Ooh, thank you, David. And I'll ask Barbara, would you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Emily. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to just share a couple of things in addition to the current role that I have here in Virginia, where I've been the director for a little over 3 years now. I am coming up on 31 total years in the child support program, and the first 18 of that was in a different state, and then 10 years with the federal office, and then these last three in Virginia. And what I have always used as my frame of career path is the innovation of the program. So I've always been very involved in grant projects. I've always been very involved in policy development. And much of that has been driven by child support professionals. This gives us an opportunity, this being the National Market Research Survey, gives us an opportunity to use more of the customer's voice in both policy development and in the design and implementation of grant projects.
Thank you, Barbara. So let's talk about the National Child Support Market Research Survey, the who, what, why of its development. David, can you give us the background?
Sure. So this survey It was really born out of an effort between the joint INSEA NCCSD and OCSE Joint Public Relations Committee. And the results from the Federal Digital Marketing Grant showed that people were interested in the child support program, but they did not necessarily open up a case. So we really wanted to look further into the reasons why people don't open up a child support case nationally in our program. So a subcommittee comprised of Bruce Erickson of Minnesota, Amy Lindholm from Michigan, and California's Nicole Dirac worked with the California Program Innovation Team to develop the survey, which was vetted by the Joint Public Relations Committee and OCSE before its release. We then were fortunate enough to have Michigan offer funds to retain a market research vendor who conducted the survey along with a formal focus group with 11 core states. That included California, Kansas, Indiana, Illinois, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and of course, Virginia. The core states survey was completed in December of 2022, and the results are about to be released. The general survey itself is still running and will conclude on April 30th of 2023. Michigan's vendor will assist in evaluating that data as well for release. And we're expecting all of this to start to finalize with our reports come the INSEA Leadership Symposium later this year and the NCCSD conference that will be held in Oregon.
Thanks, David. Let me turn to Barbara and ask, is it truly a national survey, meaning every state is participating?
We don't know that yet, Emily. We're hopeful that not only the states are all participating, but also the tribes. The tribes also have access to the survey if they would like to use it. And what we know is that there is a wide interest in the survey. States do have to put forth a little bit of effort in order to use the survey and implement it in their state and run it however they choose to do so. So once we get those final reports from the Michigan research vendor, we will know exactly how many more states than those 11 core that David mentioned actually took up the opportunity to continue participating in what we're hoping will actually reflect a much more national set of perspectives from parents.
I would say, though, that, you know, we've already hit 11 states and we've already got a great population of groups. So anything additional that the additional states bring into this equation is really just going to help bolster, we suspect, our current findings and make them even more solid than they already are.
Okay, David. Well, maybe you can let us know what are the early results and when can we expect to see the final results?
These are interesting, exciting. It kind of identifies some opportunities that we can really dig our teeth into and explore a little bit further. So early results show there are four core barriers that exist to child support. The first is previous trauma with the program. This could be their parents were engaged in the child support program, or they knew somebody who was in the program and they were kind of hearing that directly from them, their experience. The second is a lack of flexibility or a perceived question of the competence of the child support program to address their family matter. And I think this speaks to the all or nothing approach that our child support program is right now. The participants don't have a lot of options on the way that their case gets managed. That can adjust from state to state because some states are more a little bit more flexible than others. But in general, we tend to be an all or nothing kind of program. The third is a lack of support for successful co-parenting. A lot of our parents start with that concept and that desire to be able to co-parent with their partner in raising the kids. They don't want to go all the way to heavy-handed enforcement that's happening in the child support program. And where is our program itself helping the parents figure out how to co-parent instead of just only focusing on enforcement or only focusing on the money? We hear that a lot in the survey results. And then the fourth is strictly misconceptions about the child support program. Well, I heard from a friend that you guys do this and that's terrible. I would never want to put my partner through that. Well, actually, we don't do that. And those misconceptions kind of fly about on Reddit and other social media, even to a greater extent than we might have seen, say, 10 or 15 years ago because of social media. So those misconceptions are out there. They're prevalent and they turn a lot of people off from our services. One of the biggest ones is, oh, I thought that was only for people on welfare. that's a huge misconception that pulls people away from our program when really anyone can come and get services from us if they only knew that that was open to them.
Thank you, David. And I'm not sure if you mentioned when we can expect to see the final results already.
Yeah, we expect those to come out in summer. We've got two big conferences coming up that we're aiming for. One is the NCEA Leadership Symposium that will be held in Anaheim. We think that we will have all the results in. We expect that our vendor will have time to have captured and fine-tuned and updated any reporting that we've got in place. And I'd like to be able to present a final report and those findings at that point in time. And then ultimately, the conclusion of this whole committee should be on or about the time that we do the NCCSD conference in Oregon.
Okay, and so that kind of answers the question, how will the results be shared and who exactly are they being shared with? Awesome. So I'll turn to Barbara. How should the survey results be used to inform the future for the child support program?
That might mean something a little bit different for each state or tribe, depending upon what might be available to them for a response. So it could range anything from keeping in mind those four main themes that David talked about, past trauma with the program, lack of flexibility, the lack of support for co-parenting, and then general misconceptions. If we think about the things that we can do immediately, we can certainly make strides to improve our customer service and to minimize how traumatic the program can be for parents. And we can do that a number of ways, both through educational programs to help make sure that the messaging that's out there in the public accurately reflects what the child support services truly are. We can also do that through the assistance of some of our trusted partners. So if we have other community service providers, other influencers, if you will, of parent opinions, such as fatherhood programs, co-parenting education programs, even the public school system, we can leverage those relationships that we might have with them to help improve the positive message that gets out there. It will take some concrete actions, though. And again, here are ways that states can respond to those survey results to make informed decisions. Let's talk about the misconception that we don't support co-parenting. So what are states doing with their access and visitation funding? Examining that would be a really good place to start. Maybe even considering doing something more around co-parenting, such as exploring the possibility of waivers to include a parenting time order when the financial child support obligation is put in place. Keep in mind that flexibility or the lack thereof and sort of an assembly line treatment of all cases is one of the things that has been a recurring theme throughout the early results. And so if we think about where there might be some flexibilities within existing policies, again, state by state basis, but you could look at things like the thresholds for which driver's licenses are sanctioned, or you could look at the thresholds for bank account levies. Those are very quick wins, if you will, for states to begin to examine. And then I would also suggest that if the policies could be reviewed in terms of their outcomes, that is a really powerful exercise to analyze your data and determine whether or not there might be some disparate outcomes that are happening for different groups of parents. And if so, then really look into where a DEI lens, DEI meaning diversity, equity, and inclusion lens, can be helpful, both in terms of applying it to your policies and also to administering some DEI training, implicit bias training for staff to take part in. Now, if you've got some ability to, in your state or perhaps tribe, to do something a little more heavy lifting, then those are the places where there are some great examples already out there and teaming up with other states who've taken the mantle of things like implementing a fatherhood program that is integrated into legislation and has some measure of funding behind it. looking into cooperative agreements with your local domestic violence service providers. Also, just intensive case management is an area where OCSE has already said in PIQ 1202, that's an allowable activity today. Is there a measure of resource that you can put toward, and by resource, I mean staffing, can you put toward intensive case management that's much more tailored, that is not assembly line and completely inflexible? And then lastly, let's take a look at where full family distribution might really start to get at some of these perceptions from the public. There are several states that have started to examine and really are on the verge of taking up full family distribution. Colorado has already done it, but California and Michigan are exploring and pursuing options there. And when we have those types of policy changes that are significant and that are notable, then those are things that we can add to our messaging. And we can say to the general public, we heard what you said. These are policy changes that we've made as a result of customer feedback. Anything that you can do to add as a result of customer feedback to any of your messaging can be incredibly powerful. And there are just a number of other examples out there that we probably don't have time to drill into today, but that colleagues from across the child support community would be more than happy to share. And frankly, I think David and I are hopeful that this is a conversation that is not limited to a conference or this podcast, that we can in general start perhaps even a community of practice around the declining caseload and how the exploration of what can we do now that those results have informed us starts to really take root and launches some concrete actions.
Thank you for sharing those thoughts with us. And it's a great segue to talk a little bit about your vision for the future of our program. Based on that national feedback that we've received so far, Barbara, what are you thinking in terms of Virginia's program? Are there some ideas that have caught your attention?
There are some ideas that have caught my attention. And one of the things that I know that may be a relatively quick discussion to at least begin, we'll have to see where the dialogue takes us. But I am very interested in having us explore if we can have child support be the first resort and have our other benefit programs be the last resort. I know that our leadership and our administration would like to see is very supportive of the economic stability capacity that child support brings to families. All across the Commonwealth, we're very focused on workforce and connecting people to the workforce and having them be participating in the formal labor market. And so what I mean by child support as the first resort and other benefits as the last resort is perhaps we can start to say when we have parents who are applying for any public assistance benefits, be they child care assistance or TANF or SNAP, if we say to that parent, what's the status of child support coming into your home? As the first question, not what's your income? Let's see if you're eligible. Let's first have a conversation in which we end up asking, if you had regular child support payments coming into your household, would you need TANF? Would those regular child support payments prevent the need for SNAP assistance? And if so, then let's structure a series of benefits that are very temporary initially. We get a child support action going as quickly as possible, maybe based on an existing court order. Let's put some supports around the parent who owes that child support to make sure that they are connected to the labor market. They have all of the supportive services that are needed for capacity building in terms of housing, transportation, mental and physical health care. and lots of other treatments that we might need to apply depending upon individual barriers. And then if we can get that family moving towards self-sufficiency that is based on their own exchange, right, of support, and then back out that temporary benefit so that it doesn't extend any further than it absolutely needs to, that is a model that I think we could develop, and I think we could replicate it and help other states to replicate it.
That's awesome, Barbara. Thank you so much. And David, how about you? Anything caught your attention for California's program?
Yeah, I think this is the core of our conversation right now, is what's our program going to look like 10 years from now? And Barbara's hinted at some of the very same topics that we've talked about. You know, the vision of our program is that all parents are engaged in supporting their children. I think the question we're asking ourselves here is, are we supporting our parents in the furtherance of that vision, or are we only addressing a small portion of our population in the way that we deliver our services? And I know not all states are the same. Some states are a little bit more supportive of parents than others, but at least here in California, and I suspect many other states, we go right at the enforcement right out of the gate. We establish a child support order, and then we quote unquote enforce that child support order for however long it takes. And we put on all the enforcement actions as soon as there's an issue or a need to take those actions. And we don't provide any actual supportive services to the paying parent. And I would like to see that reverse. We say we're the neutral third party, but often our actions don't demonstrate that we are in fact neutral and that we are helping both parents equally. We know that if the father, typically the father, the paying parent, is successful, then the receiving parent's going to get the money and the support that they need to be successful. And so we should be building a stronger network of tools and resources around that paying parent. We have other agencies and folks that we can refer these individuals to, but we need to take a little bit stronger core ownership. Sometimes that means we've got to change federal rules and regulations or state rules and regulations to give us the authority to utilize our funding to do those types of services. I realize we're not ideally set up to do that right now, but in the future, that's where we want to be. We want to provide a plethora of helpful resources to the paying parent to have them be successful. And ultimately, if they're choosing not to take advantage of only of all of those supportive actions, well, we've still got the enforcement piece of our program to work off of. And I think just mentally, we're trying to flip ourselves around and say from the get-go that both parents want to support their child, and we just need to help them do that instead of assuming that somebody's not going to pay, and therefore that's why we have to have all these enforcement tools in place. And then the other piece is we have to think of ourselves a little bit more like a business in how we deliver our services. Are we delivering the way that our parents want these services delivered? It used to be, it gets referred over to us. We're a recruitment agency. The government has told us how we're supposed to recoup all this money. And that's how we built up all the tools and resources that we have. But I think now that the majority of our participants come from just the outside world, they're not coming through the welfare program as much anymore, we need to be thinking in terms of how they want these services done. Either it's a tiered approach, it's an informal versus a formal. What are the different ways that we can deliver services so that we're providing what they want? Is there a mobile app or something that allows them to manage their case on their own and only engage with us when they really genuinely need our help? I know myself, I do all my banking online and I hardly ever talk to anybody. If I was using child support, I wouldn't want to talk to anybody. I would just want to handle everything on my phone. So if we're not delivering the services the way our parents want those services delivered, they're not going to come to us and seek our help. We're the best gig in town. No one can beat our prices, and yet people aren't coming to us. It says something about the way that we're delivering our services, and we have to change that to encourage them to utilize it. Government has its own stigma, and we have to work extra hard to get past that stigma to allow people to want to utilize our services and overcome that particular barrier or misconception. But that's the task ahead of us. And I think that's why this outreach and public relation information and material is going to be so valuable down the road in making some of those determinations.
Well, can we revisit some of the ideas shared at the NCIA Policy Forum? What low-hanging fruit items were shared that we could change now without waiting for statute changes?
Well, I'll key off first. I will tout Barbara is in Virginia's horn first. The media marketing grant, of all the different things that were done there, the most valuable thing that came out of that was they're simplifying the application. And they received an immediate uptick in the number of applications coming through. And I can verify those results because we have since done that as well and seen an uptick in the number of people applying for our services. So it is amazing to think that just the largest barrier to accessing our services was the mere fact that it was so hard to access our services. And I get it. The caseworker's fear or concern is, well, if I don't have all the information to move forward, I can't handle this. So you need to ask all the questions right out of the gate. That's not customer service. That's making your job easier for government. What we need to do is make it easier for our participants to get into our program and then follow up with those conversations down the road to get the additional information moving forward. Yep, a little bit harder for us, but that's what we get paid to do. That easy, simple application is massive. That's the first, easiest, fastest barrier that we could address. Sorry if I stole your thunder, Barbara.
No, I love that you shared my thunder. That's fantastic. Thank you. I love that Virginia is recognized for both its streamlined application and for the marketing that we did around that. And so those were going to be a couple of things that I was going to mention as well. If you can find a few dollars somewhere to do some marketing, not just come and apply for child support services, but do some myth busting. Do some testimonials from existing customers. It's clear that from the survey results that the general public has its opinions formed. And so it will take a little bit of messaging to unform those opinions, and some really credible sources can be helpful to doing that. And the only other things I would add to what David said is, number one, with a long application, you were still following up with the customer anyway. You didn't get all the information. You didn't get all the copies. I can assure you that there were very few of those 12 or 14 page applications that had absolutely everything complete and you could open the case and hit the ground running. Lots of follow-up always. So there's not necessarily a lot more follow-up being done just as a result of a one page application. And lastly, I'll circle back to a comment David had made in his own discussions of the future of California, which is get a mobile app. If you are not online with your application, get your application down to one page and get it online, and then get a mobile app so that the customers can apply for services online, they can do all their business on their phones. And then I would just offer a couple of other things that I think are also really good repeats from the policy forum about low-hanging fruit. And we went over a couple of these when I was speaking earlier about how the survey results can inform states about what they might begin to look at and start to change. But I would just also say that a general perception around customer service is one that we are entirely in control of. And so let's not take that lightly. Let's put some serious work into ensuring that our customer service is so good, it's so positive, it's so helpful that it can't possibly be mistaken by a customer or a new applicant as not being anything other than helpful and positive.
I think there are a couple additions I would add in. Getting involved with the local bar is going to be huge. A lot of folks, particularly middle class or upper class, are going to utilize attorneys probably to get that initial alimony and or child support set up. But I don't think those attorneys are interested in babysitting that case for the following 18 to 25 to 50 years. That's not their bailiwick. That's not their interest. So if you're able to get a good connection with the bar and show that you're not competing against them, you're happy to let them get the child support order, but then they turn that order over to us to help assist in making sure that the payments are consistent and that everything's flowing smoothly with the communication with the parents, I think that's where a natural handoff can occur. And that just requires building strong understanding between you and your local bars in your respective states. The other one that really comes to mind is establishing ourselves, the child support program, as an expert in this field and not an entity that's going to ruin things. So many times when I was watching those videos of the parents speak, the younger parents would talk about how they really wanted to maintain some sort of relationship with the other parent, and they were going to try and co-parent, and they were going to work together, and they really didn't want government involved in it. They were just going to do an informal agreement and move forward. And then there were the other parents that have been in this situation for a while, and they said, yeah, we were you 10 years ago, but then it went south, and then we found ourselves needing the support of the program and the formal structure and the additional support. And so we ultimately had to turn it into a child support case and move forward. And we as the program sit here, and we've seen enough cases to know how these things tend to go. It's all nice and fine in the beginning, but then somebody gets a new spouse, or someone moves away, or something changes the dynamic of the way things are running smoothly right now, and it causes the contention and the turmoil that then starts to kind of roll downhill and turn into a big fight before they actually come to the child support program. So is there a way for us to ease those folks and give them an informal environment to work from, but then if things start to change or adjust, they can turn it into a formal agreement with the child support program? How do we shepherd them along in that conversation and share our experience and understanding and help them be a little bit more aware of what's likely to happen in a long, long-term relationship, albeit not together anymore, but it's still a relationship with their child, that there's a lot of steps that are going along the way, a lot of opportunity for things to go south, and to kind of at least lightly formalize that in the beginning, or even actually formally formalize it, will save them a lot of heartache in the long run. We do have expertise in that. We do have a lot of knowledge to share and impart. We just have to be seen doing that and giving that kind of advice and guidance a little bit more often, instead of we will enforce your case and we will get them, you know, that kind of mantra that we tend to lead with.
One other offer that I have for folks listening today, Emily, is to really strongly encourage states to pursue the areas now where they know that eventually we will have some support from either the federal office or maybe even from Congress. And I'm talking about employment for NCPs, and I'm talking about parenting time agreements, and I'm talking about partnerships with fatherhood groups. Now, you may not have any money. You may not have a little bit of your incentives that you can peel off. You may not be able to find a little chunk of new money because you can't take money out of your operating budget for a waiver project. But what you could do if you can find a little bit of money is you could start to explore partnerships that would support NCP employment programs, that would support the incorporation of a parenting time agreement with the financial child support obligation. And then lastly, I mentioned fatherhood, and that's really a no-cost partnership. For the most part, you can find existing fatherhood groups and responsible parenting education in lots of communities across the country. If you can't find it, if you truly can't find it, maybe there is an organization out there that's interested in starting one. You could potentially find a school system that's very interested in getting dads involved in their kids' education, and you could leverage that, key off of that, to see if maybe they would also be interested in including some general fatherhood concepts and responsible parenting concepts, and see if they would be interested in a child support partnership and component to that program. Churches often have men's groups and fathers' groups. Those are great places to go. They may not call themselves fatherhood, but they absolutely are focused on men and a man's role in being a father and as a head of household or a head of a family. So those are just some other quick wins that I would mention. I think you said low-hanging fruit, and I think we could consider those things to be relatively low-hanging, so maybe medium, but if they're followed up with what we know from Commissioner Gray about her efforts to put some additional regulations in place around employment, fatherhood, and parenting time, then if you've got yourself on an on-ramp to that, the money may actually be coming at some point.
Oh, thank you both for sharing the low-hanging fruit with us again. And, you know, that's interesting. Of all the survey results you've seen, what panned out that you were expecting and what was a surprise? And we can start with you, Barbara.
You know, to be honest with you, I don't know that there was too much that was a surprise. I feel like as a 30-year child support professional, I've had a lot of those same comments shared with me directly. Now, did I necessarily anticipate that somehow the general public who doesn't have a child support case yet, which is the audience we're aiming for with this survey again, remember, would have a different perspective? No, I did not think that. And the reason for that is because they have siblings and they have next door neighbors and they have friends who have been part of the child support program. And so the grapevine is way ahead of us on this. And our reputation precedes us. So while I can't say that there was anything that was really surprising, I will say that the thing that to me is the most disappointing is the lack of understanding about how truly dedicated the child support professionals who work on these cases truly are. I wish there was a way for people to know that, and I'm sure you come across customers and other general public folks who would say, yeah, I think, you know, I knew this one lady in her, she said her caseworker was great. You know, that was something that I did hear. But for the most part, there's a lot of disparaging of child support professionals. And that disappoints me greatly because I do know that there are no harder working, no more committed. In a job as challenging as this, to do it every day the way that our child support employees and staff and professionals do, goodness, I would sure like to see them get a lot more credit for that.
Funny you say that. It's a real testament to the point you just made that most child support professionals will not disclose the department they work for. They just say social services or something, you know, safety net related, but they don't normally announce that they came from child support, right? Yeah. So how about you, David? What was the surprise?
I think the biggest surprise for me, and I wasn't thinking these terms, was the parents who said, I didn't engage the child support program because I want nothing to do with that other person. And to engage the child support program would necessarily bring that individual into my child's life. I don't want his help. I don't want anything to do with him, and therefore I'm not utilizing your services. And to know that that's probably at the detriment of the household income and the ability to raise that child, but that's still the perception that's out there, that's just hard to hear. That's probably going to be one of the most difficult populations of individuals to get across, if we even can, that two parents supporting their child is better. And in maybe their circumstance, it's not. I mean, domestic violence is its own conversation in this space. But in general, if it's just, I just don't want anything, I can do it on my own. I don't want their help. I'm in it for myself. That was tough to hear, especially in light of all the research and information and findings that say that two parents raising their child is going to have a better chance of resulting in an outstanding child growing up to be an adult. That one was tough. All the other ones I could kind of expect, and I could see us potentially figuring out ways of arranging our program to deliver services towards, but that one's going to be hard.
Well, and just to circle back to our dedicated child support professionals family, what do you suppose they need to hear, even if it might be hard to hear?
Yeah, I think this is a big one. This is a moment where we have to look at our program and say that we are not delivering the services in the way that our participants want those services delivered. Either we have the capacity, we've just chosen not to do it, or we've been locked in because of state and federal regulations that don't allow us to deliver the services the way that our participants want to see them delivered, is our kind of number one barrier. We have lived on mandatory referrals to our program for far too long, and we've just accepted in those that wanted our services on the outside. We've never had to actively go out and sell our program. And when you have to try and sell it, you realize you're not selling something that these people want to buy or invest in or bring their case to unless you make the following changes. And those are all about the individual being able to manage their own case, them being able to select the degree to which they want the child support program's involvement, the degree to which we are actually helping the paying parent be successful, because a lot of the folks that we're talking to in these surveys have said, I don't want you to hurt our family. I want you to help him be successful in paying his child support, not hurt him by taking away all these things. A lot of them don't like the enforcement actions, and yet we're obligated to do them. That's tough. That's big change we would have to do. It's kind of a mental perception change. Some states are better at this than others. I'll give you that. We're one of the harsher states, I think, approaching enforcement, and we're trying to change all those. But by and large, in almost every state, those automated actions are all set up to start working, and we don't give the benefit of the doubt, or we don't surround the individual with enough supportive services to help them be successful first. Most people want to take care of their child. They just maybe can't. And how much support are we giving that parent? That's a big lesson learned out of all this for me.
And the only thing I could add to that, David, is just to say that, you know, I think the one thing that people need to hear, child support professionals need to hear, is that we are well-intentioned in our work. We certainly are not trying to harm anyone. We believe deeply that what we are doing is in the best interest of these children and these families. The balance for that needs to come from understanding that what we think is best for children and families may not necessarily be exactly what that family wants. And allowing those families and those parents to have some level of self-determination, and for them to be able to decide what is best for their child or children, is a real adjustment. So we're going to have to continue to shift and to update our philosophies, our policies that go along with those philosophies, and make ourselves into the type of service agency that parents are seeking, rather than trying to force parents into the type of service that we think is best to deliver.
Very nicely said, Barbara. Thank you so much. Any last thoughts, ideas, or words that you would like to leave us with?
Well, for me, I'm excited about the conversations that are occurring right now, both inside our state and with my peer directors across the nation, how we go about the changes, to what degree we make these changes. They're awesome. I really enjoy the intellectual thought going into this process, and I'm looking forward to seeing 5 or 10 years down the road what the child support program is going to morph into, and how we might be delivering services down the road. It's an exciting time to be in child support, I think.
And I would just add that I would like for your audience to keep us on task. Don't let this be just another initiative that we talk about for a year or so and then we kind of move on to something else. Make sure that we keep this conversation alive. Volunteer to participate in this conversation in some way or another. Keep it on the front burner. At conferences, in other venues and conversations, take concrete actions that you are then willing to share with some of your peers so that they can replicate those things and build a community of practice that really and truly addresses this issue. The data doesn't lie.
Awesome. Thanks again to David Kilgore and Barbara Lucina. Your leadership and change ideas will help all of us child support professionals think about the child support services we offer and will impact countless program participants. We appreciate your thoughts on the National Child Support Research Survey and its implications. For NCL On Location, I'm Emily Jernigan of California Department of Child Support Services. Thank you for listening.
On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been on location.